2. Zut felt triumphant. The animal had been hurt, and hurt badly. It could have been better. The roll of the drone had caused a slight miscalculation in the throw, and instead of totally severing the animal's head as he intended, the plate had hit a strut of the plane skids, and then had struck the animal. But the results had been very satisfactory. There was red blood all over the floor plates under there. The animal had fired a new, small weapon up the corridor. But in the mirror, Zut could see that the animal was passing out, coming to for an instant, and passing out again. Zut had waited. The animal would pass out long enough for Zut to dart forward and finish it. However, it didn't quite come off as Zut had planned. The animal had crawled backward toward the back end of the drone, halting and firing a shot, backward further, firing another shot. It had crawled into a canister loading hole in the rear cargo space. The hole it went through was almost too small for it. It disappeared. Zut waited a long time and nothing else happened. Finally, he crept out of his recess and, ducking into other recesses and using his mirror, got all the way back to the rear cargo bulkheads. He tried to look in with the mirror. It was too dark in there. He shone a torch in there. Nothing. The animal must have crawled off to the side. Zut tied the torch to the mirror and looked to the right. He got one very short glimpse of the animal, and then a bullet hit the torch and mirror, and they went flying out of Zut's hand. Lucky he hadn't tried to reach in there himself. He listened all along the bulkhead. The roar of the drone was too great to hear any breathing. For quite a while he expected the animal to pop out and shoot, but nothing like that happened. He finally concluded that the animal had crawled in there and died. There sure was enough blood. Bled to death, probably. Zut beamed happily. Well, enough. Zut decided he better get to work. He opened the door of the battle plane and switched on the local command channel and tried to wake up Nup. The dimwit certainly must be up there. Maybe asleep. Zut impatiently threw on all the radio channels. That would blast the nincompoop out of his wits. Planetary had a habit of knocking in ear bones at just a few hundred feet.
Nup, you crap brain, wake up!
Nup's voice came back.
Who's this?
Look, Nup, said Zut with controlled patience. I know you are short on sleep. I know they didn't teach you the exact solution to all this in mind school. But I feel that under the existing circumstances, you might try to cooperate.
Is this Zut?
What a dimwit. What a flutter brain with its bearings burned out.
Of course it's Zut.
And you're down in the drone? Ah, I thought you were. But didn't Snip fly you out? If you were...
Shut up! Roared Zut. Here's exactly what I want you to do. Take off and land that ship just above this door. Land it close to the edge above the door so it will break the wind.
Nup wanted to know break the wind from what? Zut told him very unpleasantly. Nup, with 10 minutes of fuel left, hastened to comply. Zut intended to rob this damaged battle plane of its cartridges of fuel. He had been appalled at the skill it would take to fly it out this door. Then he had a happy thought. Maybe it carried some spares. He got up on the seat and started to rummage in the back compartment. A whole bag of cartridges, dozens of them. But he saw something else. His breathe mask exhale ports flashed. This stuff had radioactive dust on it. Of course, this wasn't surprising for packages that had been in a radiation bullet battle, and it was not much, but it frightened Zut. He flung the bag of cartridges out into the passageway and jumped out to stop them before they rolled into open spaces. Holding them at arm's length, he shook the bag. He breathed on it cautiously. No flash. Good. He opened both doors of the battle plane. He wouldn't go near the back compartment. He did everything now at arm's length. He played a torch on the housings of both main drive and balance motors. His practiced eye detected a hairline crack in the right balance motor. Maybe it would run, maybe not. The crash hadn't helped. He reached underneath it and got a paw full of wires and tore them loose, scrambled them, and laid them back unconnected but out of view. One battle plane that wouldn't fly straight. Good. He got down under the plane and looked at the drone's main drive. Ah, there was his wrench. And the animal hadn't removed the plate. Good. He put the wrench back in his boot where it belonged. The pitch and roll of the drone changed drastically now. Nup had moved. The pitch was gone, but the roll was much worse. However, it all had its good points. The drone was now crabbing and protecting the door from the wind. Gingerly reaching for the microphone, Zut stood well away from the plane.
You in position? He demanded.
It took a couple of times, but...
All right. Do you recognize a cable ladder?
Nup tried to explain that as a mining executive and a fully qualified pilot, he of course could recognize...
Fasten your end of the cable ladder to the cleats opposite the seat. Drop the weighted end of the ladder down here. Then lower an ornet on a line. And then a safety wire. All into this door. Got that?
Nup said he certainly understood it, but was there ore in the drone? He didn't quite understand.
Fuel cartridges. I'm going to send you up fuel cartridges.
Oh my, that's a relief. Will they fit?
Zut didn't bother to answer.
Of course they fit. All plain fuel cartridges were interchangeable. It was tanks to planes that didn't match.
What a crud brain.
The ladder's weighted end came whipping down. It fell on the wrong side of the tail that was jutting out of the door. The tail was wedged over. Zut, feeling quite brave, reached in, waited for a correct roll of the drone, released the magnetic brake, shifted the plane with a massive heave only a cyclo could manage, and reset the brake. Good. Now he could get the cable ladder end where it belonged. He had clearance between it and the door edge. He lashed the lower end to a floor beam. The lowering safety wire gave trouble, for it kept flying out into the wind stream. Zut radioed Nup to haul it back. Devil with it. He didn't need it. Zut reached into the battle plane and pulled out a coil of safety wire from it. Then he couldn't figure out how to use it. He tied it to the battle plane in its proper ring, but he didn't like the idea of being tied here. Suppose the plane moved or something. He left the safety wire on the floor plates. Devil with it.
Ore basket, he demanded of Nup.
It came down. It was heavy enough not to fly around in the 300-mile-an-hour blast of cold air. As Zut tied the cartridge bag into it, he realized he hadn't inspected it for fuel. It probably also had ammunition cartridges in it. Well, who knew? They might need both. As soon as they flew off, he was going to gun this interior, blow this battle plane to bits, and just make sure.
Damn animal. Damn turl.
A new thought hit him. It was a long way down. He better grab the jet backpack. Very gingerly, he reached an arm into the compartment and got it. There were two there. He brought out both. He threw one over the side and put the other on. Left the animal with no out. But of course the animal was dead. And good riddance.
Damn, turl.
You all set? He demanded on the radio.
Nup said he was, but where was the fuel? Zut let him pull up the fuel in the ornet.
You got it? Demanded Zut.
Yes, I'm trying to check. Just let me remove the spent empties and make sure the size...
Blast you for a dim-witted crud. Stand by to steady that ladder. I'm sick of being down here in this crap-infested, monkey-cursed drone. I'll take care of the refuel when I get up there. Don't put an ammunition cartridge into the fuel sleeves. I'm coming up and right now.
But he didn't come up right now. He looked at the radio and then took his wrench out of his boot and slashed the radio to bits. Of course, he'd be shooting this thing to pieces in just minutes, but caution was always best. Zut grabbed the cable ladder rungs and started up. He looked up. It was not a short climb. The Mark 32 cut off the wind stream quite a bit, but it was still a strong blast. He paused, made sure his mask wouldn't blow off, and climbed up the ladder. 3. Johnny lay on the cross members of the canister storage area of the drone, gripped in a nightmare. He was in the cage again, a collar around his throat, and a demon was crushing in the back of his skull. He kept trying to tell the demon he would shoot it if it didn't stop, but he couldn't get the words out. He wrestled himself up from the nightmare. The roar of the huge drone engines beat against his head. He realized where he was. It wasn't the collar, it was the neck lanyard of the revolver. The heavy weapon was hanging down between the beams. He painfully retrieved it. There was a small amount of light in here, and he swung the cylinder open. Just one shot left. He reached to his belt to see whether he had reloads. He didn't. The blast gun was lost. Before he passed out, he had opened the first aid kit and tied a wound pad over his head and under the face mask straps. That was all he remembered after he had shot the flashlight out of Zit's hand. He could see it gleaming still, bent over a crossmember. No, that wasn't a flashlight. It was about 4 feet away, and it seemed 40. What was it? A mechanic's mirror. So that was how Zit observed him. What had awakened him? How long had he been out? Seconds? Minutes? The back of his head felt like it had been staved in, soft to the touch. Fractured skull? Or was it just swelling and blood-matted hair? He heard something clatter. Noise around the plane had awakened him. With a sudden feeling of urgency, he made the effort and retrieved the mirror. He slid along the crossbeam and put the mirror to the hole. It was Zit. His first impulse was to dart out and use this one last bullet. Then he saw the ladder end, and the ore basket going up. They were refueling the Mark 32. The sudden thought of what they could do with the Mark 32 back at the compound shocked him fully alert. He knew what he must do. Just now, wait. That was the hard part. He kept drifting off into a murky black sea of unconsciousness. He could hold on for a while, but the wave would drown him again. Zit was on the radio. No, he was smashing the radio with the wrench. Johnny gathered himself up, tensing to dive out through the hole. He watched carefully with the mirror. Zit went over to the ladder. He started up. He stopped with just his legs visible below the door. In a wave of pain, Johnny got out of the canister loading slot. There was a safety line on the floor plates. He grabbed it and gave it a tug. It was secured to his plane. In his condition, he did not want to lapse unconscious and fall out that door. He rapidly swung the safety wire around his waist and secured it with a hasty loop. Zit's legs were gone. Johnny checked the revolver to make sure the one shot was going to come up under the firing pin when he cocked it. He swung himself onto the ladder. It was blowing outward from the drone. The bottom end was fastened inside the door, but he was now out over empty space, protected from the windstream by the tail of his battle plane. He went up several steps. Johnny had a clear view of the Mark 32. The cockpit lights were on. The door was being held open by Nup's foot. Zit was a third of the way up to the plane. For a moment, Johnny thought he was too late. He thought Nup had hoisted the fuel cartridges out of sight. But no. Nup had the caps off the fuel receptacles and was examining them. For numbers? And he had the whole ore basket in his lap. Zit was howling at Nup, something about opening the door wider and steadying the cable. Zit climbed further. The ladder was protected by the angle of the Mark 32, but there was still a tearing wind. It was ripping Zit's jacket. He roared again, something about opening the door, the words lost in the roar of the drone and the scream of the wind. Johnny cocked the revolver. The face mask protected his eyes. He could have shot either Zit or Nup. He didn't. He carefully allowed for wind and elevation. The already high muzzle velocity of a Smith & Wesson 457 Magnum was increased by blasting caps in its cartridges. He must be very careful. Only one shot. Nup kicked the door further open, the ore basket in plain view on his lap. Then Nup saw Johnny and yelled and pointed, and Zit looked back down. Johnny fired. He tried to duck back inside an instant after the shot. It was not quite fast enough. Enough fuel and ammunition for 20 battles not only went up, it also flashed down into the open fuel and ammunition receptacles. The roar and almost instantaneous concussion hit Johnny like a sledgehammer. He went outward over black space. The safety line held and snapped him back inside the door. In that confused instant, as though it were a still picture, he saw Zzt on fire just starting to fly out into space. He saw the whole Mark 32 leap in an exploding ball high in the air. Johnny hit the floor plates just inside the open slots so he wouldn't slide back. The concussion had been too much for his head, and he was passing out again. An idiot phrase passed through his mind just before a deeper darkness blanketed his senses. Old Staffer was wrong. I'm not too smart. I just cost myself the only target search beams can pick up. The drone was not rolling now that it had been relieved of its unstabilizing weight. The body on the icy floor just inside the door did not move. The lethal cargo soared onward toward Scotland and the rest of the world, its goal the final obliteration of the remainder of the human race, the ones it had missed 1,000 or more years ago. 4. The small boy sped on feet of fire through the underground passages of the dungeons of the castle. He was soaked with the rain that fell outside. His bonnet was askew. His eyes were glowing with the urgency of a message he had carried for a 2-mile sprint through the dawn twilight. He identified a room ahead and tore into it, shouting,
"Prince Dunaldin! Prince Dunaldin! Wake up! Wake up!"
Dunaldin had just settled down in his own room, in his own plaid blanket, for a nice comfortable snooze, his first in quite some time. The small boy was wrestling with excited hands to light a candle dip with a ratchet flint device. So it was Prince Dunaldin now. They only called him that on feast days or when somebody wanted a favor. His uncle, chief of Clan Fergus, was the last of the Stuarts and entitled to be called king, but he never made anything of it. The light was burning now. It shone upon the sparsely furnished, stone-walled room. It showed the rain-drenched, excited, black-eyed boy, Bitty MacLeod.
"Your squire, Dwight? Your squire, Dwight, has sent a message? Who he say is most urgent?"
Ah, this was different. Dunaldin got up and reached for his clothes. Squire, Dwight. Probably Dwight had used that because co-pilot would be an unknown word to this child.
"Your gillies are afoot, a saddle and a mount. Your squire has said 'twas most urgent."
Dunaldin glanced at his watch. It meant that the 12-hour radio silence was over, that was all. Probably a babble of news.